Now, I'm going to begin by referring back to lecture number 2. This, you may remember, was on the axial age and the emergence of the new man. You may remember that on that occasion, in that lecture, surveying human history, we divided the whole half-million-year period of the history of man into 4 great successive segments. First of all, there was the Promethean Age, the Age of Fire. Then there was the Age of Divine Kingship, the Age of Agriculture. Then there was the Axial Age. And finally, there was the Age of Science and technology. Now tonight I'm going to suggest an alternative name for the fourth age, that is to say, for the age which we called in that lecture the age of science and technology. I'm going to suggest tonight that this age, the age in the midst of which we are now living, could also be called the age of globalization. I'm afraid globalization is a rather ugly word. It's, I believe, an American coinage, and like quite a number of these rather ugly American coinages, is rather expressive and very useful. I say age of globalization rather than the global age, which would have been simpler and sweeter, because this process of globalization is still going on. The age in which we live, or perhaps towards the end of which we're living, is very much a period of the breaking down of barriers. First of all, it is, largely was, has been, a period of the breaking down of geographical barriers. Formerly, for thousands, for tens of thousands of years, the different parts of the world, the different sections of humanity, the different races of mankind, were comparatively, if not almost entirely, isolated from one another. And they developed more or less in isolation from one another. If there was any contact, it tended to be peripheral and it tended to be occasional. But all that has now changed. In fact, is changing, though the change seems to have been almost completed by now. We find that all the different sections of the human race, all the different races of mankind, all the different populations of the world, living in different countries, following different customs, evolving different cultures, have all now come into closer and closer contact with one another. And we find that this has been brought about due to immensely increased facilities of communication. First of all, at the very beginning almost of this period, this age of globalization, there came the railway, linking continents together. Then there came the ocean-going steamship. Then there came the telegraph and the telephone. And finally, at an ever-increasing pace, there came, in this century itself, the aeroplane, the radio, and television. And this vast, this intricate communications network has made it very much easier than ever before simply to get around. And it's made, therefore, metaphorically speaking, the world a very much smaller place, so much so that it has created what one modern thinker, McLuhan, calls the global village. Nowadays we are, as it were, living on top of one another. Everybody in the world, everybody who cares to know, knows what is happening everywhere in the world at the very time that it is happening, just as in a village. If you're living in a little village, whether it's in India or whether it's in this country, maybe 100, maybe 200 houses, if Mr. So-and-so is going to get married, or if Mrs. So-and-so hung out her washing half an hour late yesterday, you know it within a matter of minutes, within a matter of hours. Huh? You're just one little tight community, and news flashes around very quickly. Well, now, the characteristic of this age in which we're living, this age of globalization, is that this sort of thing happens so far as the world as a whole is concerned. The world itself has become a sort of village. And we, all of us, millions and millions though we may be, are, as it were, villagers in this global village. And this is the first time in the history of the world that such a thing has happened. So we've all been drawn much closer together. We're all living, as it were, almost literally on top of one another in this world at present. And the repercussions of this, as it were, tightening up of everything, this enfolding of everything upon itself, this enfolding, as Tara de Chardra puts it, of the human race in upon itself, has had repercussions in all the different fields of life and human activity. First of all, most obviously, there are the political and the economic repercussions. One hears on the radio, for instance, about something happening in West Germany, some election result or other, and then one hears a few minutes later that as a result of that, stocks and shares have gone down on the Tokyo Stock Exchange immediately in response. So all this sort of thing, these political, these economic repercussions, these are also obvious and so well known, there's no need to go into any detail. And then there's the cultural field. The same sort of thing is happening there. We find that the fine arts, for instance, are all becoming, nowadays, international, becoming, if you like, supranational. Take, for instance, the field of music. We find nowadays that Oriental music, whether Indian or Chinese or Japanese, is beginning to fertilize Western music. And Western music, classical music, pop music, beginning to fertilize to Eastern music. In this way, this sort of reciprocal process, this mutual influence, goes on. And it's just the same in the field, the even more important field of philosophy and religion. It's no longer one way. For centuries, we know, Christian missionaries have been going forth from the West to the East to convert the heathen. Catholics and Protestants, Lutherans, Methodists, Salvation Army people, they've all been streaming out to the East to convert people there. But now the traffic is, as it were, reversed. Now we find that missionaries of great Oriental religions are, I won't say pouring into the West, but very, very many of them are coming as compared with before. Nowadays in the streets of London, streets of New York, streets of Paris, you can find representatives of Zen Buddhism, of various Hindu cults, and so on. And the net result of all this, this sort of intermingling of East and West, is that the spiritual teachings of all ages and all countries and all climes are becoming more and more the common heritage of all mankind. If you think of some of the popular paperback series being published in this country and in the United States today, if one reflects upon it, it is a really amazing thing that just for a pound or two you can purchase translations of most of the really great spiritual classics of the East and of the West, and have them all on your own shelf to read yourself in your own time at your own leisure. A thing that was not possible before in the whole history of the world. So we find that all these things, all these spiritual teachings, all these spiritual traditions, all these great spiritual classics, that all this is where in the melting pot together nowadays, all acting upon, all influencing one another. This is the situation that we find in the field of philosophy, in the field of religion. Globalization of thought also, globalization of spiritual experience even, is now in process of coming about. And in these circumstances, under these conditions, it is, we may say, inevitable that sooner or later, in one way or another, we should come to the subject matter of tonight's lecture. That is to say, Buddhism, Nietzsche, and the Superman. Inevitable that sooner or later, these two should be compared.